Hello and welcome to another episode of the CSI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually with a tartan tint. I am your host, Ian Stephen, and joining me today is the eloquent educator of Scottish football. He is a wizardly winger, a titillating teacher, a concomitant columnist, and a prodigious podcaster. It's the alliteratively named Danny Denham. Welcome to the show, Danny.
Thanks for having me on. I like we did there, the alliteration. Superb.
So, the most important thing first, fill us in on what's happening with you and your life at the moment, because Scottish football and careers of footballers are very much in flux.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been part-time for several years, so I was in a different position than a lot of footballers, and probably in a more fortunate position as a teacher. We were still working via online systems, so I was still getting paid, so there was no hit financially for me, still working every day. And then in terms of the football, the club, our club have been absolutely great with us. East Fife, they've paid us in full and gave us assurances, and they're trying to make them to a stage where it's not possible, but they're trying everything they can at this moment. So for me personally, it's not been as tough financially, and I've got my health as well. I'm a fairly healthy guy. My family's healthy as well, so I've been quite lucky, fortunate in that regard, compared to a lot of families out there who have been struggling both financially and with probably some death in the family. So tough time, but I've been more fortunate than most.
Now, is your plan that you're going to be on East Fife's books for next season? Is that the kind of goal?
Yeah, I signed a 2-year contract at the start of last year, so I was staying regardless of what happened. So again, that was probably quite fortunate. I'd had an okay season last year, but it put that sort of uncertainty in my mind that I knew I was staying, and the club honoured that. So yeah, I'm more than happy to stay, especially after what's happened. This, the way they've conducted themselves, it's from my point of view, it's been great, because I know a lot of clubs haven't acted superbly, and I hope when this is all done that players do remember which clubs looked after their players and which clubs didn't.
Do you know, I was going to ask that exact same thing, that footballers, do they talk to each other, listen, if you ever get an offer, go to this place, they're great, they look after you?
So that again, a difficult one, because I think at my stage of my career, and I'm part-time, that I will definitely take that into consideration, and players do talk. But if a player's 23, 22, 23 and he's got a chance to move full time, and there's only one full time club after him, and the money's never that good anyway, and it's a gamble, you feel like the club's doing you a favour rather than you're doing them a favour, and they might just bite the hand off for it and forget about what happened in the recent past. But I feel that players of maybe my age and a bit more critical thinking about them will realise, listen, this club might be promising you things now, but we've seen how they conducted themselves during this. Sometimes clubs get themselves in a financial position where they're not capable, but I do feel there's been a few clubs that have taken advantage of the situation to release players and not look after them. So I hope that players do take it on board, but it's just one of those things. I think when it's all done, people will just forget about it and it's done. And that's the worry, but I hope not.
I think the old kind of vision of what part-time football was that a player would finish a shift at a factory, walk onto the pitch with a cigarette in his mouth, and then start kicking the opposition striker for 90 minutes. It's not how part-time football works now, but can you explain the kind of differences between full-time and part-time football to people that might not know?
Well, part-time football, you're training obviously evenings, Tuesday, Thursday, or Monday, Wednesday, sometimes three times a week, and then you're playing on a Saturday, and it's physically tiring, mentally tiring. It has, as you say, it's completely changed the professionalism levels since I started part-time, because when I started playing part-time football, it was at Forfar 2012, I think, or 2011, and it was McDonald's on the way back from some people, and big fizzy Lucozades, and not looking after the body, really. And now it's changed where people are stretching before, they're looking after their bodies, they're doing so much more extra. But I think part-time football has become more popular in recent years. I think just with the lowering of the wages from sort of full-time clubs in the Championship, and I think a few people are taking that option, so you're seeing a higher level of professional in part-time anyway. I think the difference is the time. You've got to balance your time and manage your time. I think when I was full-time, I was only fortunate enough to have full-time for a year, but it was so much time on your hands. Like, you'd go in and you'd go in for 9, I think, and you'd start training at 10, and you'd be sitting in the changing room twiddling your thumbs for an hour, having a bit of banter with the boys, which is great, but I'm one of them that needs to keep my mind busy. And there was dead times of the day, and you'd finish at 2, and you could do extra, but then you're sharing a car with 4 others who don't want to, so you had to go home with them, and then you've got hours to kill in the day. I think with part-time, it's just time is of the essence. When you get to train, you've got to get there 15 minutes in the changing room, then you've got to get started quick, whereas full-time is a wee bit more sitting about, also a wee bit more thorough tactics. You've got plenty of time in the week to do tactics, you've got video analysis, you've got more time to do those things. So I think at part-time, they just have to prioritise stuff. But it is, as I say, it's getting more professional. I think a lot of full-time players are coming down to our level and playing out of choice rather than being released. And it's definitely added something to the professionalism of the game.
Well, listen, there's some full-time players that have dipped down now even below that level. There's DJ Darren Jameson. He's signed for Kelty Hearts. Mm-hmm. He's an outstanding goalkeeper. Paul Payton signed for East Kilbride last night. So, I mean, there's talent all through the levels in Scottish football now.
Yeah, those players mentioned, obviously, I played with DJ.
Have you seen a better penalty stopper in football than Darren Jameson?
Livingston, he was sensational, but I don't think he saved one when he was at Arbroath with me. But to be fair, we didn't concede many. he's a really good goalkeeper. You know, he's technically, his kicking's really good as well. I think he probably got a raw deal a little bit. I think they brought in Gaston, and I think DJ made a mistake, and Gaston got in, and that was that for DJ really, because I think Gaston, again, a really good goalkeeper. Two high quality goalkeepers in the Championship. I think he's just a bit unfortunate. And then I'm a wee bit cynical about boys going down that level, that route. I'm not cynical, because I just wish they would be transparent. In my opinion, the reason they're going down there is not the club's ambition, it's money. I just don't understand how you can say, well, this club's got ambition, and then to reject a League One team to go there, but that's 3 tiers below, and you might not be there in 3 years' time. Join them when they're in League One. I'm not fully buying the ambition thing. I think it's boys, and probably for the right reasons, because they've got families to look after. Money's not great in Scottish football. I think they're probably getting a large sum of money to play in non-league, so I don't know.
Is it fair to say you're a romantic then, Danny, when it comes to football?
Never used to be, I don't think. I think in the latter years, in the last 7 or 8 years, since I've started playing in the lower leagues, I think, yeah, like you see the tradition of the clubs, and that's not to say it's all great, because I'm not a big fan of clubs like Albion Rovers, who aren't really doing anything to up the facilities, and I do appreciate the teams like Kelty and etc. and East Kilbride are trying to better themselves, and they do have that ambition. But I think if you can play for these clubs, these professional clubs, I think you should for as long as you can. I think they've got history, and they're at a higher level. You're playing against better opposition. You're not playing, like, I've seen some of the results Kelly were getting, it was like 12-1 and stuff like that. It's never going to happen at League One, Championship, League Two. It's just more competitive. So for me personally, I'm in a position where I get paid okay from football, I get paid a good wage from my day job, but I do understand these boys going there, but for me it wouldn't be something I'd consider unless there was a lack of options on the table.
Well, let's talk about how the romance started. How did you get into football? Tell us about your youth career.
Well, just football. My family, mum said, they do like their football, but my mum doesn't like it. So it was really for my dad. And again, he was kind of the only one in his family that really liked football. So he pushed it on me. He wasn't very good or anything like that. But I had these feet that turned in, like, I don't know, like the opposite of a penguin. And I think they didn't think I was going to be getting very good at sport, but then I think they took me along to something when I was 5-year-old, and I got the ball and was dribbling past folk. So like, oh, he's got a bit about him. So I think they pushed it on me, not pushed it on me, but encouraged me. And I just absolutely loved it. My dad used to take me to all the Hearts games, every home game, occasional away games when I was young as well. So I think I just got the bug for it early. And I played for a local boys club in Edinburgh called Dunedin. Just loved it. It was just fantastic. It's kind of anything else. When I was younger, it was always football. It was, even though there was other sports, it was football was the one I loved and tracked throughout my younger years.
So when did you start realising the professional ranks were taking an interest?
It wasn't too late, to be honest. I was sort of at Hearts as a youth, and I got released young. I think I was like 13 or something, like 14, quite young. So I thought that ship had sailed, really. And then I sort of just played for fun. Went to a few different boys' clubs with my friends, and then I was getting a bit of success in the sort of boys' club level. I remember Lee Griffiths was playing for Hutchison Vale at the time, actually. He was just streets ahead. But that was the level that I was sort of playing at boys' club, not academy or anything like that. And then I went to Edinburgh City. The sort of club called Roseburn formed into Edinburgh City Youth. So I went there and had a bit of success there. Signed for Edinburgh City first team, but this was when they were in the East of Scotland League, and I think I was 16 at the time, and it was money to play, and I'm talking £200 a year to play, but after paying your subs to play, it was an absolute bonus. So even then, didn't really see it as a proper pathway. And then it was only Stirling University, went to Stirling, but didn't play for Stirling football team until third year at uni. Was still at Edinburgh City, and then they asked me if I wanted to come along to training. Got a scholarship from that, which was superb. After that, a bit of success at Stirling, that was when I had a few bit of interest. I played for Scottish Unis and Great British Unis teams, and I had Ross Campbell was the Scottish team manager at the time, so he obviously highlighted me to his dad, and I was in at Falkirk on trial as well. So that was when I sort of realised, you know, I might have a sniff again, a club here. And then during my trial at Falkirk, I got a phone call for Dick Campbell, and not really looked back since. That's me being in professional football fairly late, because I think I started when I was 21 for 8-9 years now.
So what does a phone call from Dick Campbell sound like when he's just trying to entice you to his club?
He's not trying to woo you. He's not definitely trying to woo you. You're on the back foot, even though he's offering, you know what I mean, even if he's wanting to sign you, you are ultimately, listen, the math knowledge of the lower leagues was poor before I signed for Forfar. I was a Hearts fan, all Hearts of the Championship now, probably. At the time, I didn't really know anything of the lower leagues, so when Dick phoned, I didn't know who he was, and couldn't really understand him on the phone. He's not great on the phone. And he was just, I've told the story so many times, but he offered me a contract there then, which was quite rare to do. Like, you've seen me, but he'd obviously taken the word for Ross. Not much money, like peanuts, but it was a big opportunity for me to play professional football. But I wanted to see what Falkirk had to say, so I said to him, 3 days, I'm in a 3 or 4 more days at Falkirk, so I'll get back to you. And he was just like, well, you've got 3 days. If not, then the contract's done. So straight away, you're on the back foot. Phoned him back in 3 days because I didn't get anything at Falkirk, and my dad was telling me, make sure you don't take the first offer. So asked for a bit more, which was just terrible advice with Dick Campbell, but I think in business is usually a thing you use to negotiate, but with him, no, what he says goes. So I've asked for a wee bit more money. I went, hi Dick, and he's like, he's quite old school, he's like, who's Dick? He's like, it's a fucking gaffer to you, son. So straight away again, back foot, and then and I said, all right, Gaffer, is it okay if I get £25 more? I've just been a student. You never take the first offer. And he was just like, all right, son, how many games you played? I was like, oh, I played all season for Stirling. He went, no, how many professional games you played, son? I was like, none. He was like, how many goals you scored then, professional? None. He was like, well, you've no earned the right to a fucking opinion, son. £120. You can take it or you can fucking leave it. It's gone tomorrow. So I think I just said, right, I'll take it. Panicked, fully took the contract. Then we were training at Kilgraston, went up to sign the contract, back in his car with him and his brother, Ian Pink Campbell, just flanking me pretty much. My contract signed it. Could have said absolutely anything, but I think I was just petrified and I signed for him. But that was the start of a long relationship with Big Dick.
Did the relationship get a bit better once you started playing that season for Forfar?
To be fair, the first season we were kind of, I was kind of hot and cold with him, but then after that season I came back, he it was good. Like, still to this day when I see him, I'm intimidated, you know. Like, I'm really good pals with his son, Yano, who played, Ian Campbell, who played left back. I played golf with him. Even just the other day, we played golf, and it's right next to where the gaffer stays, Dick stays, and he came down. We just seen him, we're playing at like 6, so we just seen him walking across fairways, just stop and play, strolling down, and we're just pissing, like, me and Yano pissing ourselves because we know what he's about to say. And then that hole, he followed us for 9 holes, just bantering me, just in my head the whole time, just slaughtering me. I can't say anything back to him, even though I'm not one of his players anymore, but I'm still got that fear. But that first season, it was like, I think I started really quick, which was good. I think when you're a young boy and you come for university football, you have to start quick, and I came quick. Scored my debut and hit the ground running. There was a bit of interest from other teams straight off the bat, and I think got a wee bit cocky. I think it went to my head a bit. Didn't really know any lower league players, and I was maybe disrespectful in that way, that I'm just like, I'm going to be better than these. Maybe just belief. I think I was maybe got a bit ahead of myself. I think sometimes me and Dick didn't see eye to eye. That's just his way. He slaughters you. And sometimes when you've had a bad game, I just at that stage wasn't ready to just accept it. But I found myself in the stand for a few games because of that. So I think it's just toned that line. But it was a up and down season with him emotionally, but a good season for me professionally. First season, I scored double figures, and I couldn't really ask for anything more than that. And he gave me a chance, so fair play to him.
So in your day job, you're a PE teacher, is that right?
I'm actually just I'm a primary school teacher, who teaches PE only. So okay. I teach PE to primary school kids, but I'm qualified to teach in the classroom.
Do you channel your inner Dick Campbell if you get any sass back from any of these kids during your lessons?
Absolutely not. No, I think the way that teaching's gone is pretty much the opposite of his approach. It's more restorative and thinking about where the kid's point of view is, which wasn't the case when I was at school, and certainly isn't the case in the Dick Campbell changing room.
Fantastic. So that season with Forfar was good enough to pique interest, as you said. Livingston were the successful club that came in for you. Tell us about that, how that move went down.
There was a few teams sort of sniffing about Dundee. There was a few other ones. I had a good season, and then I think Stevie Butcher was Mark Butcher's brother, and he used to coach the Stirling University team. So he's highlighted me to his brother, who was assistant to Richie Burke at the time at Livingston, and they said, we're coming to watch in a game, I think. So I was nervous before that game. I had an okay game, but I think on the Sunday they said, yeah, do you want to meet us? Mark Butcher was I hadn't heard from Richie at all. He was a gaffer, but Mark Butcher was speaking to me. So I said, yeah, absolutely. Working at a hotel at the time, so I went to meet them at Costa in Edinburgh at the Gael, and it was Richie and Mark Burchill, and it was weird because I don't think Richie was that interested in signing. I don't care, I was his signing, I think it was Mark Burchill signing, but they've gave me the opportunity to go full time, and it was in terrible money, but it was one of them that I'd never been full time before. I remember Livingston because my age, I'm 1990 born, so it was like Livingston used to have that team with David Fernandez and all that, and Lovell, and remember them as a fairly big club. So it was up that an option of going full time, and I was just like, it doesn't matter what the money was, I was always going to take an offer from full time. It turned out that was the only full time offer I got loads of part time ones, but it was only full time one. I never had that opportunity in my life before, so I thought, you know what, 1 year, let's do it, let's just see how it goes. So signed that contract with Livingston, and didn't really work out, but it was good to get a taste of it.
Was that the season where Richie Burke had to move on towards the start of the season and Burchill took over?
It was John McGlynn took over from John McGlynn, Richie Burke. Right, yeah. So Richie, he didn't like me really at all. I wasn't one of his guys. We had our first home game of the season, so he wasn't playing me. So first home game of the season, there was the reserves were playing on the Friday night, and we were playing on the Saturday. And he played me in the reserves game on the Friday night, so I'm like, well, I'm not going to play on the Saturday then. Or was it Thursday night? Anyway, it was a day or two before, less than 40 hours before the game. And we had no strikers at the time at Livingston. We had Mark McNally was injured. We were struggling. And I can play up top. I can do a job there. We had no strikers and he played me in this. So I was like, maybe get a chance. Played me in the reserve game. So I was like, why is he playing the reserve game if he doesn't want to play me? Played 120 minutes. Went to extra time this game. And then someone said, I can't play on the Saturday. So I had to start the game on the Saturday. And I'm just like, that was always going to be a concern. But it just showed you how far out the picture he saw me. But then he played me, I scored on my debut, and then he started to warm to me, and then he got the sack. So as soon as he got the sack, John McGlynn comes in, and John McGlynn's a lovely fella, a really, really good fella, really professional as well. But I'm not as kind of player. I think the one change he made in the first week he took the job was take me out and put someone else in. So it was an uphill battle with him as well. So it was a struggle. I had to get both managers on board, and it took me a while for each of them.
You always feel bad for a player when he makes a move and then just as he makes his move the manager moves on and he's kind of left in a limbo where he's not the new manager's guy. I think that's kind of happened to Shinny down at Derby because he went down for Lampard and then Lampard moves on straight away and Koku comes in and doesn't play him when he's just on the bench. It happens. It seems quite cruel.
Yeah, it's part of football, I suppose, especially in England. It's cutthroat. The managers don't stick around that long all the time. Scotland, we maybe have a wee bit of a longer shelf life. It's just part of football, and you've just got to try and get the managers to warm to you. Lucky Livingston, we didn't have a huge squad, so I managed to force my way in at times, even under McGlynn.
I always felt at the time when I spoke to you, Livy, I don't know if you were quiet or shy, but was it maybe it was kind of an underneath kind of unhappiness that was there that you weren't maybe getting as much kind of game time as you wanted?
Yeah, but I was also, I felt I need to be respectful. I'm this guy that's came from part-time football into full-time. I don't want to be this big gobby guy. I wasn't happy, but I was always motivated to do well. I always wanted to do well, and I felt like at times I did do well, and I got my chance, and I forced my way back in. But I wouldn't say it was an unhappiness. At the time, I was young as well. Didn't want to be a huge personality. I just wanted to just sort of sit back and observe. Maybe could have been a bit more vocal, but didn't want to burn any bridges at that stage in my career and finding my feet really at full-time level. So I think maybe took a wee bit of backseat at the time.
Because I remember I was reading your blog when you started doing your blog. I thought it was really entertaining. But then I was reading it thinking, why is Danny down the divisions? He was good whenever I watched him at Livy. He looked like he was good enough for full-time football. It's just always one of those questions that I had at the time, I suppose. But I mean, it worked out for Forfar, didn't it? Because Forfar benefited from you coming back to them.
Yeah, well, and honestly though, I think Championship full-time football probably was it. That's it's just that little bit. Maybe they didn't quite have the ability. Whereas I think at League One and League Two level, I think I'm a good player at that level. And as you say, Forfar and then Arbroath and then hopefully East Fife have benefited from that. That reliability, I think at Championship level I was very inconsistent, hot and cold. I could perform one day and then struggle the next. So I feel like League One's probably my level if I'm pragmatic enough about it.
So in the summer of 2014, Dick Campbell must have been back on the phone then.
Oh yeah, so we had the Breakin had Ray McKinnon at the time, who was doing really well with them. It's not kind of worked out his managerial career since, but really good ideas. I was going to go to them. I'd made a decision. I got offered a contract at Livingston, but I'd made a decision. I'm going part-time. I want to start a career. I'm living in my mum and dad's basement, pretty much. At the age of 23, I want to get moving. So I've made a decision to go part-time. And Ray spoke so well. Darren Taylor assistant spoke so well, and I was on my way there, and then Dick sort of last minute put a call in and matched the wage that I was getting, because at that time it was getting a good part-time wage and I can really concentrate on putting steps in place to get a career started. So it was really on money, so good wage from both of them. And I said, Dick, I've already kind of agreed with Breakin, I don't know what to go back on my word. And he was just like, it's more money you're after. And I was like, well, wouldn't be amiss. And he went, no, can't do it for you. This is the offer, take it or leave it. I went, it's not going to work this time, Gaffer. I've got another club to bounce you off. So I said, no, I'm pretty much agreed with Breakin. And then last minute, phone said, right, spoke to the directors. They've done this. They've been willing to do this for you. And it was a big increase in wage. And at that stage, I needed to get a good wage so I could put steps in place to get back to university and do a postgrad, and postgraduate in teaching. So I knew Fofa as well, knew the players, knew the dressing room, good experienced set of players, and I knew Dick's ways. And I went back, and instead of being this young guy on no money, I was now one of the better earners at Fofa. So I knew I wouldn't have to fight for my place as much with Dick. So it worked out fairly well going back, and it was funny the second time round. Yeah, he was good crack the second time round.
So it didn't work out for Dick. It didn't really work out for Fofa, because Gary Bolan eventually came in, and the club went down in the summer of 2016, lowest tier. But Gary was given shift to continue, wasn't he? He was allowed to continue try and bring the club back up. Am I correct in that?
Yes. Yeah, the first season I went back, though, we nearly won the league in League One. We nearly won the league, lost it last day, and then we nearly went up for the playoffs. It was just, so the season after, when Dick got sacked, so that was 2015-16. So when the season that Dick got sacked, it was like eight or nine games into that season after nearly winning the league the previous season, we were struggling. I think we were seventh place or something like that. And I think the board just bit the bullet and sacked him, and Gary came in. I warmed to Bolan at the end, but at the start it was difficult. He came in with an attitude where the players had let the manager down, and he was hard, and he came for full time, I think, as well. He was at Airdrie, but he had been full time. He had both nights he had us training at Fofa, even though most of us were Central Belt, and we'd been used to training in Perth, which was an extra hour each way. So it was just, I didn't really take much consideration of the players. He was working the players awfully hard and not really making it enjoyable. And I think players didn't fully buy into that. A few left, and we ended up getting relegated. And he changed his tack the following season. He was much better. He managed the players better. We had like Tam O'Brien, who at the time, he's brilliant now, but he was a good player then, and he was silly. But if you were hard on it, if you were too strict on him, he'd just go fuck off. No. So I think Gary just managed them better the second season. He was like the star man that second season. So I think he was conscious of that and changed his approach.
Well, I mean, Gary's previous form of getting a team out of the lower league, he did that with Livingston, but Livingston were full time and they had Division One. In fact, they have two players who now play in the Premier League, because Keegs was there, DeVito was in that third division team as well, I think.
Mark McNulty was there, and Andrew Halliday was there, like good players. Liam Fox, good players that were way above that level, weren't they?
Yeah. But he brought him. So Gary decided he was going to bring some of his own guys in. Grant Adam came in. A couple of players he brought in from his old club, Airdrie, Jim Lister, David Cox, Eddie Malone came in as well, very experienced players. Who were the players you thought that Gary brought in that really worked well in that squad?
Lewis Milne was one that got us a crucial amount of goals. I think he got double figures. David Cox was crucial. I mean, he's, say what you want about him, he's an angry man sometimes, but you want him in your team rather than against you. He fought for everything. Jamie Bain came in. He was crucial. Fullback, Jamie Bain, right back. Still at Fofa, actually. He was good. Who did they bring in at the back? Andy Munro at the back. Was solid for us, but it was the players that were already there. In terms of Tam O'Brien, was incredible. I think he was running up to Shane Sutherland in the Player of the Year for the league. Added a good season as well. Josh Peters, there was another one. He's not really done much since, but that season he was incredible. He signed him from Highland League. I think he scored 17 goals, 18 goals. Just a young lad, so he did good business. To be fair to Gary, he did good business, and we started very, very quick at the blocks.
Was there a good kind of buzz in kind of pre-season? Did everyone kind of mesh quite well? Because sometimes you get a lot of new faces coming in and it's awkward, they don't get on, morale's not very good.
It was a weird one, because I actually didn't really want to be there at the time, at the start of that season. I'd signed a two-year contract with Dick right after we nearly got promoted, and then that year where we got relegated, and I wasn't playing under Bowen to begin with, and then he put me in and I did well. But I just thought, right, he doesn't really like me as a player. I don't really want to be here. I had offers from Dick was at Arbroath now, so Dick was asking me to go there. And I'd actually asked to leave. I said, listen, let's just cancel the contract. You don't really rate me. I'm a fairly decent wage. You can free that up. And he was like, no, absolutely not. The club won't allow that. I want you your next season. So from that, I wasn't buzzing to go back to training. But to be fair, when I went back, I worked my socks off, and the players were good crack. Grant Adam was an absolute dafty, but he was a good lad. Jamie Bain fitted in well. He was good. But I think me and Tam, and we were the sort of players that had been there, and Michael Travis, Stuart Malcolm came back. We knew the club was about, and we kind of took the lead in the dressing room in that regard. So the training was good. St Andrews was good facility as well. But Gary Bowen started that out, so we were training the pre-season at St Andrews. Superb facilities, double sessions, tough, really tough, but good. Like, again, what you need, you get a good vibe after you've completed some of those pre-season sessions. So there was a good feeling going into the season. It took me a couple of weeks to start enjoying it again, but then once those 2 weeks were done, I was starting to enjoy my football again.
Well, did you feel there was pressure at that point from within the club or from the fans that because the club had dropped down, they had to go straight back up again? Did you sense that?
Not particularly. I didn't feel the pressure. I think that was always our aim, to go up. But I looked at the team we had and thought, yeah, good chance we will go up. And I don't know. I didn't feel any pressure from the fans. The fans at Forfar are pretty good. I think there's less pressure at these clubs. I think there's more community feel at these clubs. And it's not to say that they don't want to win. Of course they want to win, but I feel that other clubs, so for example, we go and play at Falkirk and they haven't scored within half an hour, the fans turn on them, whereas Forfar, if it's 0-0, the fans aren't going to turn on you. And I think it's, some clubs are a bit more poisonous, whereas at Forfar there was never really any of that. They were hard on you if you didn't do your best, but there wasn't any really added pressure from them.
You famously put out a tweet that saying at a lower level you can hear what each individual fan can say to you, and what was the best insult that people had ever heard, and you get quite a big response to that, did you not?
Yeah, I think so. There's some crackers out there. I don't get much. I get like stick, like your blogs are piss or your podcasts are piss. I don't even get much of a mascot or your denim, your diving, whatever. And most of the part from the crowd's funny. It's some of them are so angry. And I'm like, why are you so angry? Just come down shouting. And then we played rave, and this guy, I was just warming up, and he's coming down shouting at me. Like, I'm like, what is wrong? Like, so you get those ones, but then you get the ones that you get the funny shouts as well. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but you do get.
Can I tell you what my best one was?
Go on then.
When I was in my youth, when I was at college, I was doing stewarding at St Mirren. And I was in like the kind of shed bit at St Mirren, and you know Mark Yardley, the big 6 foot two,
big lad,
17, 18 stone striker. He was playing for St Mirren. He was popular. They liked him, but it was a throw in, and he started backpedaling at the throw in, and in unison, everyone in the shed started going beep 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 beep. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. That's good batter. You get stuff like that. You do get stuff like that in lower leagues, and you can make out every shout. So no, that's a positive side to playing, especially grounds with terrace, and you can hear them. They're so close to you, you can hear everything they say.
Do you ever get opposition players that are quite good like that, they're trying to get in your head in a good way when you're playing?
There's not, honestly, I do not take anything serious enough to nobody can get in my head at all when I'm playing football with little shouts. Like one, just like Bobby Barr's one I play against, is just, he's annoying because he just talks all game, just like commentates on himself sometimes. And stuff. But he's a wee wind up merchant. But some people get angry than others. I just don't get angry like that. Like I need to be more angry in the pit. Sometimes it would maybe help, but I just don't see. No, it just doesn't help me in any way. And I've seen other players bite on anything, and some of the insults are so bad. It's just like your shit, no, your shit. It's just nah. It's not, nothing can wind me up in the pitch. No player can wind me up.
Well, as that season started, you might know this more than me, Danny. You're a lot younger. The UK number one was Cold Water by Major Lazer featuring Justin Bieber and M.O. You ever heard of that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Way over my head. Yeah. Number one film was Finding Dory. Sequel to Finding Nemo. So, and when you guys started, it was we were into the cups to start with, and I think it was right saying it's the League Cup that started first. Your group had Dumbarton, Peterhead, East Fife, and Dundee. First game against the Barton, that was one of the ones that went to penalties. That might have been the first season where it started, or maybe the second season.
Yeah, maybe the first, I think.
Lost to Peterhead. You beat East Fife 2-0. And then we won't mention the Dundee game. That was a bit of a...
Yeah, well, I didn't play in the Dumbarton game. I was suspended from the previous season. I got sent off against Hearts in the previous League Cup campaign. So that was the first season.
Way to impress your boyhood club to try and get them to sign you.
Yeah, well, I missed a sitter in the last minute, and then a minute later I got sent off. Went to extra time, actually, and we got beat. But it wasn't never a red card. It's a terrible decision. If it's four red cards, I don't think any of them, like one of them should have been a red card, but the other three, you're just like, how has that ever been? But... Anyway,
you're a nightmare, Danny, because we have to try and work out why is he get sent. You've got like 1 minute of the game left, and everyone in the press box is going, "Why is Danny being sent off? Don't know." And it happens so often in those leagues. Like right at the final whistle, there's like five players sent off, and you're sitting trying to work out what on earth's happened. Yeah. I don't know what goes on.
Yeah, it's late in the game as well. It didn't help, but it was one of them. But I remember Dumbarton game was suspended, and I think we did well. They were a championship side at the time, and we were League Two, so did well. We won on penalties, and then the Peterhead game, I played all right, but we didn't do great up there. I still remember this. It was 2-0, and then as you say, the Beat East Fife, and then the Dundee game, I think it was 7. Yep. Greg Stewart got a move the following day, and I'm convinced me and Andy Monroe got him a move, just chopping us for fun, just. Looks like he was going to bend it on my left, and he would just chop, and we'd dive in, and he would chop again, and then he would put it in. So 7-0 going on 10. I came off actually. It was only 2-0 when I came off, so I actually did all right compared to the rest of them. It was 5 more goals when they were on the pitch. So,
well, I think the league campaign started against Edinburgh, and I think it was a loss. I don't think he actually started the league.
Oh, we beat them. Beat Edinburgh City 3-2.
Yes.
I'm sure of it, yeah.
Then Cowden Beef the next game after that was 4-3.
Yeah.
Big Todorov scoring in that game. I don't know if you remember Todorov playing Big Toddy, the Bulgarian.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how well he's done. Actually, he was rubbish at Cowden Beef, but he's done well wherever else he's been. He was good at Livingston, he was good at Inverness, I think.
For a striker, he's one of the best headers of a ball I've ever seen. He was great.
He played centre-back a lot of the time.
He got converted to centre-back for a game because of an emergency at Livy, and then I think he flitted between the two, but he was great as a striker. Just if you kick the ball up, brilliant. Then was it Berwick you played after that?
I think we won all the first 8 games or 9 games of the season. I think we beat everybody, genuinely. Cowden Beef beat Edinburgh City, we beat Berwick. I'm trying to think, because I'm thinking back when my first defeat was. Maybe Montrose. I think Montrose was our first defeat, because I was trying to think back on that yesterday. But it was an incredible start, absolutely incredible start from us.
Yeah, because the first two games, you were in second place in the league. You hit onto the third game of the season, you go top of the league, and then you're top of the league all the way up until the last 2 weeks of the season. So that's a phenomenal record for staying on top for that long. But you must have broke a few coupons, I think, at the end of the season by slipping off top spot. I think everybody must have had you as the safe bet in the bookies for the kind of run that you were on.
Yeah, it was. It was my favourite season, I think. But at the same time, it was probably so up and down in terms of emotions, and it was horrible the last few months, we kind of just fell off it massively. We were 13 points clear and panic set in. We lost a couple of games and ended up chucking the league. But it was more a good season for me. I'd scored the most goals I'd scored. I was in a car school, so I was travelling to games with people I really liked. My career off the pitch had got off and running. So it was just like a combination of loads of different things that probably made it my favourite season, but the end was bleak, very, very bleak.
Should we cut to the what effectively happened? Talk to us about the run-in going in at the end of that league campaign, because you were so much in command. How did the slip start?
It was weird because we played Arbroath at their bit and we were 9 points clear. We played Arbroath a horrible day and we've managed to grind out at Gayfield. They hadn't been beaten there, I don't think. I think we grind out a 1-0 win at Gayfield, went 12 points clear. And you think it was in March, you're thinking that's pretty much it. If just a few more wins. And then I think we got beat the following week of someone, and then a few injuries, and then I think a lot of boys got nervous. I genuinely do think a lot of the boys got nervous. They were overthinking things, and then we were just getting beat by the odd goal. It wasn't that we were getting hammered and we were getting beat by the odd goal, and then it wasn't a great place to be training at the time. It was, you could just see some boys had gone. I was experienced enough at that stage and I was having a good season, so I was still contributing. Tam O'Brien was superb through that period. Gavin Swanky had turned it on during that period, but I think the majority of the players, apart from those I mentioned, struggled for whatever reason. And it was just, I think, just momentum picked up. And you know what? Arbroath slipped up a couple of times as well. We lost that many games that Arbroath could end up winning the league by more because of the way we did it. And then we'd sort of picked up. It was 3 or 4 games left and picked up again, and then we slipped up at Cowdenbeath and we drew 1-1, and Arbroath had won. That was the second last game of the season. I remember looking at their score and thinking they're top. They hadn't been top all year, we'd been top all year, and they were top. And then the last game of the season they drew, so if we'd won our game at Annan we would have won the league anyway. And we went 3-0 down to Annan, who were mid-table. Went 3-0 down to their second string team because they were playoffs, they'd qualified, they were resting boys for the playoffs. 3-0 down, 3 goals in 5 minutes. Ended up clawing it back to 3-2, I think, but it was just a disaster. It was an awful end to this to the league season.
I think it was actually 4-2 that one ended.
They must have scored late on in the day, but we were, because I remember we got back to 3-2 and then we were pushed in, got a goal chopped off. I think they must have scored on the counter attack at the end.
So it effectively pushed you into the playoffs at that point. And it was the playoffs, which are semi-final and final, and it was Annan that you had to play in the playoffs. So you just played them in the league. They had a great result down in the borders, and then you had to go and play them again. So does that filter into your mindset, or are you guys able to wipe the slate completely and start all over again?
It was a weird thing. We were so disappointed, but I think it was just got to get going again. And I remember we changed the formation completely and it didn't work. We were 2-0 down at Annan. We went down to Annan midweek and 2-0 down within 15 minutes again. And it looked down and out, really. And then we've rallied, I think. I remember Martin Fovren came on, sort of fourth legend, really. He came on, he was a bit older at the time, he came on and scored a free kick out of nothing. And then we scored again, Michael Travis scored, and we drew 2-2 down at their bit. And then all of a sudden a bit of belief comes back. Brought them up to our bit on the Saturday and absolutely tonked them. I think it was 5-1 or something like that. Or something. We absolutely smashed them that second game, and that was the forfeit that was like at the start of the season. The way we were playing, so a bit of belief came back after that game.
I think it was 4-2, but you were up 3-0 at half time. So I think it was effectively kind of over at that point. So then it's the final two legs again, and it's Peterhead at home first, and Peterhead with the side you played at the start of the season in the Challenge Cup. Yeah. You're 1-0 down at half time. And you're at home, so it looks like Peterhead have got the advantage So what happened at half time to turn everything around?
Good question. Can't really remember. I remember being 1-0 down, kind of gets the run of play. We're actually playing all right. And I remember we scored again. Foxy scored a 30-yarder into the top corner just from nothing. Just got the ball and just smashed it in. I couldn't believe it. And then they get man sent off, which was just luck. Peterhead were not the same team as they were at the start of the season. We played them at the start of the season, they were good. But their confidence, you just see, had been absolutely shook by a poor season in League One. And they just hit the ropes. We went 2-1 up. We could have went 3 or 4-1 up on that day. We thought we might have to rue that. They were just not the same team. And we now had the sort of... We did the kick up the arse we needed. We looked a team again, looked a good side again. And everything was just flowing. You're just not thinking about things. And then 2-1. Could have been 3 or 4, as I say. So we were a bit disappointed to have to go to the second leg, and the job wasn't done.
Well, the job was done in the second leg. Emphatically, nobody can argue you did not deserve promotion out of the playoffs. 5-1 against Peterhead, 2-0 up at half time. It looks like Peterhead just collapsed effectively in that second leg.
Yeah, well, again, I've lost so many playoffs in my life. I lost my first season at Forfar, my second time back at Forfar. Been relegated, obviously, as well. So I hadn't had much success in a team sense. So I was nervous going in, to be honest. I was tired because I'd had my postgraduate year. My teaching was just an intense year. And I was on my last legs. I just knew just one more push. And I think we started so well again. I've watched this game back, actually, recently. I think it was Lewis Milne scored within 5 minutes, and that was a real settler for us. And then, do you know what? Peterhead actually battered us. They played some lovely stuff, and there were chances. Grant had made some good saves, didn't score, and then David Cox scored for us on the counter attack. And you're thinking, over. That's 4-1 on aggregate, but you just never know. And then I've managed to score the third myself. I was absolutely knackered. I remember outside of the foot, left foot. One of my favourite goals I've scored, and I think that was the clincher. And after that, I was straight off to the gaffer, getting me off. I'm knackered. after that, so. I'd done my bit, I felt, and then sub. But it's even worse watching you're 5-1 up an aggregate with half an hour to go, and you still think oh, they could score four. They could score because they scored a goal, and I was like, oh no, just three more now. But I think when we scored the fourth and fifth, that was good. So it was good. Obviously disappointing to not go up via as champions, which is a disappointment to this day. But it was a great end to a fantastic season for Forfar, and we're glad to leave on good terms with them promoted back to League One.
For the benefit of people who are listening to the podcast, they didn't get to see Danny do the actual move from Agadu to try and indicate to the bench that he wants to come off. I'm glad that his bench understood exactly what that motion meant, or it could have taken. I think he wants to do the halftime draw, it looks like. I think he wants to do tombola.
No, that's a well-renowned gesture for getting off.
And the gesture for I don't want to come off now is pretending not to see the bench and wandering away somewhere else.
You can't get away with that now because you have to walk off at the side of the pitch that you, because Dick Campbell used to love that one. He used to say, right, you're going to come off in a minute. Go as far away as you can, because if you'd be winning 1-0 or 2-0, you won't waste time. Go as far away from the dugout as you can, and then I'll take you off. So that, and then you would walk off slowly, waste time. Whereas now, if you get subbed, you just have to go off at the nearest byline. So that tactic doesn't work anymore.
Was it the commentators can now be going, why is he standing still in the centre circle? Well, I think he must be coming off now. Equidistant to every part of the pitch.
Yeah.
So it was a good season for you. I think were you the club's top scorer in the league?
I was up there. It was Alamir and Josh Peters. I think Josh Peters scored on that day that he came off the bench and scored the fifth goal. He'd started unbelievably. He'd scored like 12 goals within the first couple of months, and then he sort of had a dry spell. Whereas I was sort of gradual. And I'd caught him. I think we were level. I think he scored the fifth goal. I think he scored 16 and I scored 15 or something like that. But yeah, for me personally, goals were just coming. And I don't know if that was a good age in my career, but also... We were in League Two, and you're winning most games, so you're having more opportunities. But I was very happy with my goal return, especially because it wasn't like braces or hat tricks. It was like vital goals, a lot of vital goals. So I was really happy with that. Happy with that return.
Well, Shane Sutherland won the player of the season. If you score a lot of goals, you're probably going to get it. That's the way it works in football. But bizarrely, the PFA Scotland Championship Team of the Year, it only had one Fofa player in it, despite you leading the league for 32 out of the 36 weeks getting promoted. It's only Tam O'Brien that was in there. Perhaps a snub from your fellow professionals. I don't know how you would... Four Elgin City players that are in there.
It's a shambles. It's a shambles, a team. I remember thinking at the time, because Ladbrokes did a team as well, so it's like they were the sponsors and I was in that one. But to have these wingers in the team who'd scored two goals and that scored 15, come on, ridiculous. But to be fair, they don't really matter. They really don't. It's like this, I've seen the SPFL team for this season, for the one the fans got to vote, and it was even worse. I couldn't believe some of the boys who were getting in.
Premier League was just Rangers and Celtic because they've got the most fans that voted.
But even that would make more sense. I think the Championship, a Partick striker with one goal this season, got in ahead of Nisbet. I think Kevin Nisbet, who scored 30 goals, and Shankler scored how many goals, whatever. League Two, we had most of them were Stranraer players. And you're like, Stranraer got relegated. What's going on here? So it was a scandal that I wasn't in that team. It was a scandal, but it ain't anywhere near the scandals of the team that are pushing now. So these teams, it's who mates, basically. Bobby Lynn got in. Bobby Lynn's a terrific player, right? That's probably Bobby Lynn's worst season in Scottish football. He scored 3 goals. Bobby Lynn last season scored 12th in the Championship. The season before scored 30 in League One. That's deserving of a place. This season scored 3 goals and he's getting a shambles.
I know. I'm biased, obviously, because I'm a journalist. But the Football Writers Awards, they do seem to have maybe more kind of left field selections at times, other than the traditional Old Firm players. But they don't dip down into below the top flight, really. So it's maybe not a good advert for the game, or a good acknowledgement for some of the players that play outside the top flight. Maybe that needs to change, actually.
Yeah, well, I think to be fair, I'm not a fan of betting companies, but the Ladbrokes one, which was the sponsor, was pretty much nail on, to be honest. It was people that should have been in it that were snubbed, not just because I was in it, but because there was a few other boys that were in it that deserved to be in it. Because I think even, you're right, it was Elgin, if you would, and Ryan McCord was at Arbroath and they won the league, and Ryan McCord scored something like 16 goals. He didn't get in it, I don't think. And you're like, how is he? Like, he was superb. He scored vital goals, league winning goals. He's not on the team. So it was crazy. But to be fair, Shane Sutherland did deserve it. He was incredible, and he's got his move now, so he's obviously still a good player.
See, my system's the best when I do player ratings at the end of a match, Danny. What I do is I go, oh, Danny Denham, he was playing, he was really nice to me in that podcast. He gets a 9 out of 10. Or that guy there, he never came out to speak to me after a match. 3. He used to play for Rangers.
That definitely plays a part, doesn't it?
He used to play for Rangers. 5.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, genuinely, I think that plays a part subconsciously or deliberately. I think even when I do my PFA Team of the Year, I'm like, he had a good season, but he's a bit of a bell end, so I'm not going to put him in. It does definitely play a part. Maybe I was too much of a bell end at the time and nobody fancied putting me in their list.
I want to talk to you about the Challenge Cup from that season, if possible, because maybe the Challenge Cup doesn't get talked about a lot in kind of mainstream circles. How do players view the Challenge Cup? Is it just an extra set of fixtures, or is it something that they enjoy, something they want to take part in?
I think you do want to take part in it, but like any game you want to play in. But I can't say you're too upset when you get put out. It's like I remember that season we went to. It was a distraction more than anything. It was a distraction. We went up to Fort Martin midweek. Like, you're asking part-time players to go up to the Highland League midweek to play in a fixture that doesn't really mean anything in the grand scheme of things, really. I think as a if you get through that, which we did, and we beat Raith Rovers as well, and you get to the latter rounds, then you start to think, oh, no, it's a chance to win some silverware. And then you can get a bit excited about it. But the early stages, it's a feeling of apathy from a lot of people towards it, and especially now it's got Colt teams in it. And you've got teams from Ireland and Wales, and I don't know. I can't speak for everybody. I'm just not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of it. League Cups. I love the League Cup and how they've changed that. I think the format's superb. The group stage in that gives a chance to play against top teams and teams below you. And I like the penalty rule. I think it makes it a bit more exciting. That was good, but the Challenge Cup, nah, it's just not for me.
Because, I mean, you played the Aberdeen Colts in that season. You beat them. You beat Raith Rovers as well.
Yeah, that was on Aberdeen Colts. It wasn't Fort Martin. Aberdeen Colts played at Fort Martin. So we had to go up to Fort Martin to play Aberdeen Colts. And it was just, not for me.
Then you played the New Saints as well. You didn't get to travel to Wales, though. That was just a home tie.
They were good. They were really, really good, actually. I knew they'd be all right because they're full time, but their style of football was good. I thought they would be like English teams play and just pump it long, but they knocked it about. They beat us 3-1. It was 1-1 for a lot of the game, but they deserved to win that. They were class. So I'm surprised they haven't won it yet. But I suppose they're not as good as they used to be. So see, they've not won that league. And Connors Key won that league, so maybe not the same team as they used to be.
So I used to live in Hamilton when Hamilton won against Hibs in that playoff promotion tie, the Tony Andrew goal, and I saw how the team bus just stopped randomly in the middle of the street, and they were mobbed by fans everywhere because they'd been promoted in this playoff push. So what happened once you had disposed of Peterhead in that playoff tie? What were the celebrations like?
Good. Peterhead, obviously, it was in Peterhead, so we went back to Forfar, but I think on the day, on the pitch, some fans ran the pitch, but it was just a great relief for me, more than anything, a relief. In the changing room, it was, as you can imagine, the usual scenes where you'll see sort of champagne beers flying about. I mean, on the bus, I was tired. I was tired of a long year, football and career-wise, just I put so much work in to both. Just fatigued. So I remember just sitting beside Craig Reynolds, the physio, and where everybody else was getting pissed, I think I was just sleeping with him. And then we got back to Forfar, and that was good. So we went to Forfar, and they had the new clubhouses they had opened and stuff, and it was, listen, it's not like you're getting mobbed. It was Forfar's a small place, but there was a good collection of fans in there, and shared a drink. Ended up going out in Forfar, actually. Can't remember much. Pretty hazy. Ended up going out in Forfar that night and driving down the road the following day after a good breakfast to sober myself up. So no, it was good fun. You could see it means a lot. It means there's not as many fans, but it means a lot to those people who do support Forfar. It means a huge amount, probably more so than, say, a Celtic win the league and you're a Celtic fan. I think it means more to Forfar fans than your average Celtic fan, because it's not something they experience every day.
No, I think you're 100% right. I don't think, for example, St Johnstone winning the cup recently, I don't think an Old Firm fan could ever replicate the joy that St Johnstone fans would have had, mm-hmm. because they've never seen it in their lifetime, effectively. So,
yeah, it's a big, in life, I feel as well, without getting too deep, that you have to suffer a bit to enjoy the good things, you know. Yeah, I don't feel like I can enjoy a chocolate biscuit unless I've smashed a run, a 5K run, then I feel like I deserve that, I enjoy that more, rather than if I haven't done that and sit. It's just not the same. It's not the same. So it's the same with football. I've seen Hibs winning 102 years, winning the 114, sorry, even, winning the Scottish Cup. Huge day for them. Unbelievable scenes for them. An absolute feeling of euphoria and joy that Celtic Rangers fans will never get to experience. So we're the real winners at the end of the day.
You've heard it first here, guys. You've heard it first. A Hearts fan actually paying tribute to Hibs winning the cup. Who would have thought it?
I'm neutral. He's not neutral these days, but I'm very on the fence with a lot of things. I'm not as big a Hearts fan as I used to be, and I respect a lot of the stuff Hibs have done in the community. I remember working the schools and some of the community stuff. The players coming in, it was when Liam Henderson was there. Superb with the kids, and I can appreciate a club that's run well. And because that's the thing with Twitter these days, you put an opinion across and it's clearly because you've got an agenda, whereas I feel like I can critically think. Hearts have been far from saints during this, and I'm not afraid to say that, the way they've treated some situations. But also, I think they've been a bit hard done by, and I tweeted that the other day and I got some abuse. But listen, I'm on the fence. I can be more neutral these days.
I don't know why they didn't just extend, like, have a bigger league next season with the proviso that three teams go straight down and another team goes into the playoffs, and it's all evened out after a season, so everything's back to normal.
Yeah, as I say, the path of least resistance is just harmless clubs. Harmless clubs.
Have you just dropped some Confucius on us?
No, that's just the way I speak. I'm a deep thinker, but no, I just think that you just want to hurt as few clubs as you can. It's been a crazy situation. People have so much tribalism in football. It becomes just people slinging mud at each other on Twitter. Just like, stop it. Just pick the path that's easiest for most.
Well, you decided to pick the path that was easiest by rejoining Dick Campbell again at Arbroath.
Yeah.
This is a third phone call from Dick? Well,
thing is, Dick had been, he'd been trying to sign me again for, even though I had time on my contract at Forfar, he was trying to sign me the previous year, and he was texting me for a year, and I was like, let's just get the season out of the way. I'm at Forfar, you're at Arbroath, we're both going for the league here, and I'll speak to you at the end of the season. And I remember we beat them at Gayfield with Forfar, and I've meant to phone my gaffer, Gary Boland, to say, oh, I'm running late for training tonight. This was 2 days after we'd beat them. And I forgot that I hadn't changed his name. It was Gary Boland I'd saved him under, not gaffer. The gaffer was, Dick Campbell's a gaffer to me. He is just the gaffer.
Yeah.
So I phoned him, and he wasn't my manager. 2 days after we'd beat them, and I'd played a big part in it. And he answered, and then my balls just dropped. So from then, it's just, Danny, what do you want, son? And I just realised, clicked in that moment, shit, I phoned the wrong one. So yeah, I spoke to him probably sooner than I imagined, but he was sort of phoning me and texting me throughout the playoffs, etc. And that, wishing us luck. Pink, the assistant manager, was good, and I met Pink for a meeting, and it was a good deal, and I was keen to join them again. I enjoyed working. Like, you just enjoy your time. It's a good laugh working for them. It's not like, that's my theory at this stage was, for a career on the go, I want to have a good time. And you do, you have a great time with them, up and down time, but you know that there's going to be a story or two, and it's going to be a laugh with them. And most importantly, good dressing rooms. They are the masters of building good dressing rooms with few bad eggs, and very few bad eggs. Every dressing room's got a couple. His dressing rooms don't. So I knew I'd enjoy that. And probably got a bit of stick from Forfar fans for making the move to Arbroath. But
when you say a bad egg, Danny, do you mean players that are maybe sulky, bring everyone else down, kind of unhappy kind of guys?
Sulky, but also players that have influence, players who are experienced and have influence, who are also sulky and bring a bad culture to the place. Sort of blame guys for being busy, and you're like, what do you mean being busy is a good thing? Like, busy, like, calling them busy bars, I'm like, busy, being busy is good, getting, running about, doing more shifts, eating right, that's a good thing. Whereas making the people feel bad, and the younger folk look at them and go, oh, he's a big deal, I'll just do what he does. Or like, people just have a huffy when they're on the bench, or just guys with bad attitudes, guys that think they're better than they are. There's always a few, there's so many deluded folk in Scottish football that think they're better than they are, but listen, you're at this level for a reason. You might be better on this level, but you've got to prove it on the pitch, and being a baby about it isn't going to work, and there's a lot of babies in Scottish football. So to get a dressing room out them is rare, but I think something that Dick Campbell thrives on. I think when he signs a boy, he knows their personality, and he works out from what he's heard from other people, he signs them on that as well. And then if it doesn't work out and he doesn't like their personality, he is not afraid to just get shot at them within a second. I think he knows the value of a good dressing room.
Well, that might be the ultimate compliment to you, that he keeps bringing back. Strachan always did that with Paul Telfer, because Paul Telfer knew exactly what was needed. He was positive, and he could also help teach the other players to do what Strachan wanted. It kind of leads into your kind of professional background as well, but maybe that's why Dick keeps bringing you back, because you're trusted and he genuinely does like you.
I think so. I think he's, the loyalty is there from both of us, and he knows I'm not going to come in and rock the boat in terms of, I'm not going to knife people, I'm not going to be behind people's back, I'm going to be snipey and bitchy, I'm a supportive teammate. At the end of the day, if I'm not happy, if I'm not playing, and I'm not going to be happy, but I'm not going to be saying, well, what's the gaffer doing today? Why I should be playing and sitting there with a petted lip. I think every player at Arbroath was similar at Forfar as well, was similar. And I feel there's a lot of managers in Scottish football that just think, oh, he's a good player, but he's a dick, but he's a good player, so I'm going to sign him because he's a good player. And then you just see, I've seen it in so many dressing rooms, I've seen it in so many teams that should be doing better, good players, and they don't. And I think that's a major, major reason why.
Well, they had success when with Dick was there at Arbroath. He does what he does, and he gets teams promoted. They were high flying in the championship as well. They were shocking quite a lot of big teams last season. I think a lot of people were hoping they were going to sneak into the playoffs and maybe do the impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think they were going to do as well as did. I thought they'd stay up. I did think they'd stay up. I was, because people were saying Brechin, I'm like, this is not Brechin, this is a good team. Good players. I'd played in that team and I knew how good these players were. But I was surprised to see them just about in the playoffs, and they could have made the playoffs and that would have been incredible. But I feel like it's not rocket science what he does. He doesn't, tactics aren't revolutionary. Dick Campbell's tactics, 4-4-2 mostly, or 4-5-1. But the players he's got, trusted players who know their role, doesn't have to give them much guidance, they know how to play. Underrated players. I mean, you've got players, Tam O'Brien for me is the best part-time player. He's not just the best part-time player, he's the best defender in the lower leagues. He could quite easily play in the Premier League, but there's nobody knew anything about him. There's Bobby Lynn, another one who's just a terrific player on his day. Defensive wise, it's just Jason Thompson, solid. Ricky Little, solid. Just really solid and compact. And I felt like I couldn't believe people were comparing him to Brechin. I was just like, are you kidding me? Arbroath have absolutely scooshed League One. Brechin snuck up via the playoffs, and then they've proved people wrong. And Aloha as well. I've got a lot of respect for what Aloha do as well. Every season, just keep ticking away and keep bookies' favourites to go down all the time, and they prove them wrong. So.
Recreation Park is a tough place to go.
Horrible place to go. Yeah. Horrible. I never. I think I won once there, but I've been beaten so many times there. But great to see teams, like, I love seeing part-time teams do well, because I know how hard the players work in their day jobs as well as having to do it on a Saturday. But no, I'm not surprised that they stayed up, and I wouldn't be surprised again if they stayed up next season.
Well, the question in Meffel for next season is, are East Fife as a part-time team going to do incredibly well? And you're in the perfect position to answer that question.
I feel they've got the building blocks. I generally do. It's so hard to tell. Like, I feel like we never expected. We've got Falkirk and Partick in the league, and they'll be expected to win the league. But I back us in terms of the players we've got. Like, maybe don't have the squad depth that those ones have, but the way, there's a good feel about the place in terms of, like, Arbroath there was, keeping the squad together, and I think East Fife are trying to do that. They're saying that boys on longer term deals, you can't underestimate the importance of keeping boys together, not a massive switch around the players. We've got a good nucleus now. We've signed every single player bar Anton Dowds, who maybe is going on to bigger and better things. I think he might still sign, I don't really know, but he could be moving full time. But apart from him, everybody else is signed on again that we wanted to keep. So add a couple more, you never know. You do never know. There's players in that team again, just like Arbroath, who I think are underrated. And Chris Higgins has still got it. He's 35. Brilliant. Brilliant. He's in incredible shape, like, as well. Incredible, Nick. He's talking about people who are busy and professional. He's the ultimate. And then you've got Scott Agnew, just technically superb. Unbelievable player. And then you've got Ryan Wallace. We know his quality. So we've got good players all over the park. Squad depth might harm us, you never know. May have to be lucky with injuries, but I'm positive about our chances. But we'll
Danny, there's teams that have released, what, 17 players this off-season, and they're scrabbling to get players in the books. If you've got a settled squad, you're bringing them all back for the first 1 to 2 months of the season, you might be picking up close to maximum points compared to these guys that are still trying to work out how to play.
Yeah, exactly, and it's a 27-game season. It's not like it's it's a long season, so if you start quick, you put yourself in a great position. I think he's found the right thing morally, but also it's going to work out, I think, professionally as well. Hopefully, if we start quick, as you say, teams finding their feet, you do just never know. And it's a good place to be at the moment, East Fife. I think I underestimated how good a club it was, community-wise, and the people around it. Pleasantly surprised. I knew it would be a good club. I didn't know how it would be as good as it was. I'd be delighted. I'd be delighted if we do well next year.
Well, Danny, you've been an absolute star. Thank you for being so candid with us. We hope we get to speak to you again in future, and best of luck for the new season.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it. It was good.